This is Wells Tech, a show that explores the intersection of technology and ministry. Wells Tech is a part of the Streams Media Network sponsored by Wells, the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Your show hosts are Martin Spriggs and Sally Draper. Join the conversation at wellstech.wells.net.
Hello, everybody. This is Martin Spriggs back and hopefully better than ever. This is episode 365 of Wells Tech for Tuesday, October 28th, 2014. Happy to be joining a good friend and co-host, podcasting partner, Sally Draper. Hi, Sally. What happened while I was gone?
Oh, who cares? We don't want to go watch those shows, Martin. We'll just kind of move on from here.
They were awesome. I didn't actually see both of them, but what I saw was just perfect. So,
you're kind.
I'm great in my absence. So thank you so much for everything that you did.
A big grin here from me today. I'm happy to have you back, happy to have you driving things, happy to have you healthy. It's a blessing.
I can drive a podcast, but my doctor won't let me drive a car yet. So that's the next step. I take them in baby steps. So
okay,
he had no trouble with me driving a podcast, but a car, yeah, not so much. So hopefully next week. For anybody that I don't know what you shared, Sally, but I did have some heart issues, so I had some open heart surgery, and I got to experience the grace of God bringing me through that, and I do thank Him for everything that He's done, and feeling pretty good. Good enough at least to do the show and get back on the my feet a little bit, but obviously from my home office here.
I'll tell you what, it's a good thing to hear your voice. We're real thankful for it.
Yep, and that we includes Jason Schmidt this afternoon. Hey, Jason.
Hey, Martin. Hey, Sally. How are you guys doing?
Excellent.
Well, and we know how Martin's doing, so that's okay.
Jason is our semi-regular classroom technology correspondent, and this is our classroom technology focused show, and Jason and Sally got their heads together and I think have come up with really a relevant theme as far as what's going on in the educational world today, and that's something that we call STEM, STEM. It's all in the news. I mean, we've been hearing it a lot in these circles for the last couple years. In fact, back in 2011 we had a show about STEM, but I think more than ever, we're hearing it in a lot of different ways. Maybe we should start by defining STEM a little bit, Jason. That's something that I know is maybe going on in your school district. And maybe even before we do that, we should maybe take a step back and help everybody or remind everybody what you are doing, Jason, these days. Used to be in the Wells circles. You're still in the Wells circles, I guess.
Yep.
But you're not in a Wells school, but you're in more of a traditional situation. Tell us a little bit about that.
So in my current role right now, I'm the instructional technologist for Bennington Public Schools. So basically what that means is I get to the best way that I can come up with to describe it to people is I'm like a teacher without a classroom and an administrator without a building. I get to work with, what's that?
You're nowhere man. Yes.
Well, yeah, kind of. It's like I get to do all the fun stuff that I like to do with kids and work with them on special projects and do technology focused kinds of things and have a good time with that kind of stuff. But I don't have to do grades. I don't necessarily have to deal with parents if I don't feel like it or any of that kind of stuff. And then I have the administrator responsibilities too. I do budgeting. I do professional development. I do strategic planning, all of that kind of stuff, but my name isn't on anything, so it's not, if it doesn't go well, it's not my fault, which happens quite frequently, but it's very good. I have very forgiving coworkers that I work with. But
in that strategic planning role, I'm assuming that things like STEM are really front and center for you. How you figure out how those kinds of things get into your school district, right?
Right, exactly. And when we're talking about STEM, and we talk about this concept of science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, we're not really talking about any one particular subject area. And that's kind of something that you know, if we don't get anything else out of this conversation, it's that this is not a subject or something additional to teach. It's meant to be something that is integrated across disciplines and across the curriculum, where you're getting kids to kind of think beyond just the little silos of content that they're working in. So, you know, there are concepts in science, you know, when you're talking about friction and you're talking about mass and matter, all of those kinds of things have a practical application when you go into an engineering aspect, or if you're working on, you know, some kind of a design for something, doing prototyping or figuring out how to solve a problem. You know, all of those things kind of are really big deal when it comes to STEM and when it comes to education in general, and really just working on, you know, integrating those kinds of skills and that kind of problem solving into the curriculum can be a really daunting challenge.
Mm-hmm. Why is this important to our Wells children? You know, they're getting the Word of God. I mean, they're getting the important stuff. Where does this fit in? Will this be an important skill for them to take into life with them?
Yeah, go ahead, Sally.
Well, I think number one is some of the key words that you capitalized on there, Jason, creative problem solving, curiosity, persistence, those kind of skills carry over across all different disciplines and are very important job skills to have. Somebody I talked to recently, I think maybe it was Mike Hartman, was saying that when people go to hire as concerned with what's written on the sheepskin, but whether the person can learn, whether they can apply themselves and solve problems in any types of situations. You know, I think that jobs are there in the science, technology, engineering, mathematics spectrum. So, you know, you are preparing them for specific job responsibilities. But I also think it's just a basic skill set. You know, I told someone the story recently about my dad requiring me to take accounting in high school, and I thought that was kind of a nowhere course to be in. But I think accounting touches every type of work that you do. You know, Jason just mentioned he works on budgets in his job. Martin, I think you might work on budgets a little in your job as well. And so having those accounting skills, understanding that basics of a balance sheet and an income statement is great skills to tuck away. And even if you aren't going to be an engineer, you know, students having this understanding and grasping problem-solving techniques and stuff is a huge valuable resource. So it's all good.
Yeah, and then one final thing, you know, with when it comes to STEM, one thing that we really got to capitalize on too is this is something. It's just fun, you know. When you do STEM right, and when you have all of these hands-on kinds of activities, and you know, kids are actively learning and solving problems, and you know, their minds are totally engaged in what they're doing. Your time limit is up, and they don't want to stop. And you know, there's so much that you can capitalize just from the engagement perspective when it comes to STEM and how that gets incorporated into the curriculum. So we can't leave that out of the discussion too.
So excellent. One thing that you and I talked about, and actually I think maybe you came up with this title, STEM on a shoestring. There is a perception out there that STEM is an expensive thing to pull off, that you need to spend a lot of money on gadgetry, etc., because you got to have the tools to get in this game or whatever. And I guess that's kind of perhaps a misconception. I think you can on gadgetry and wizardry, but you can also do it for pretty much free if you look around.
Yeah, and you know, that's another part of this discussion that we, you know, as we were planning this and as I was thinking about it a little bit more, as you know, it can be very easy to incorporate this kind of thinking into the way that you're doing things. I just had a conversation with one of my first grade teachers today, and she has an engineering unit that she does with her first graders, and they build paper airplanes. And you know, a paper, we all have paper. You don't have to have, you know, you don't have to have all of these really neat things in order to be able to use to do something like that. Just, you know, it's just once again that problem solving that we're trying to get at.
So if there is budget, Jason, maybe we can talk about that, that we want to, that a school would maybe want to throw at, you know, getting a little bit more STEM-ier, if that's a word. Where would those dollars be first spent as you're putting together a budget? What kind of essentials are necessary? Now, I mean, you talked about, you know, on a shoestring, but there are probably some things that could be set aside that would make a difference.
You know, and as soon as you bring up the topic of STEM, one of the first things that almost anybody is going to talk about is a 3D printer. We were fortunate in my district this last summer. We got a grant to purchase a 3D printer over the summer. So we went to Monoprice, actually. It's $1,200, but it does, you know, it's a dual extrusion, so it'll do two colors. You can, you know, print two different models at the same time, kind of a thing. And you know, if you have the money, that is a really interesting and engaging way to do some prototyping, and really kind of, you know, that it stems from there. I didn't do that on purpose, but see what I did there. these things are, this equipment is amazing. You can print out puzzles. I had one, a friend of mine today at a meeting brought in a brain, like a model of a skull and a brain that they printed, and it's got the two-piece brain that kind of goes inside, and the skull is on a hinge, and the skull was one piece, was one print, and then the brain that fits inside it was another. And you know, just to put these things together and see how all of that works, you know, and if you know, Sally, we were talking about before the show, you have boys that are building their own drone, which is phenomenal. I think that's amazing. And you know, printing parts for these drones, if you have access to those, or you know, parts for puzzles or automotive pieces, or just sculptures, and figuring out, you know, maybe you use a CAD modeling program to build a bridge, and you know, test your structures like that, and you know, build a, you know, an architectural design. I mean, there are so many things that you can do with it. And once you get over the initial startup cost, the filament that you use in there is not very expensive. It's about $40 a kilogram, and that'll give you a lot of printing for that small amount of money for the medium. So that would probably be where, you know, that's one of the, if you've got money, that's a really good place to invest it. Go ahead.
I was just going to say another popular device type thing is a Raspberry Pi, which is basically a Linux computer on a circuit board kind of sized device, and you can program it to do all kinds of things. So you could get your kids into Python programming and have them design and build things that the Raspberry Pi runs. So that's pretty popular, and that's a whole lot less expensive. I think you could do that. You could buy a Pi for $25 or $35. You can go up from there. You can buy multiple Pis and string them together and all kinds of things like that. But that would certainly be a way to spend some money. And then I think just investing in some different software solutions and platforms, like maybe Minecraft EDU. I think, Jason, we did a show on you doing Minecraft EDU in your school district.
Yeah, that's my claim to fame. I use Minecraft all the time. But yeah, you know, there are modules you can add mods to it where you're doing computer programming. You have these little computers that are running around and building stuff for you. You set up the program and then they just go and do it. You can also, you know, there are things that you can do with Minecraft EDU where you build the model in Minecraft and then you can export it as a 3D model that goes into that can be exported into a 3D, you know, a 3D printer or something like that. And then you also, I just found this out recently, one of the free tools that we're talking about, you can take a model that you build in that and export it for Minecraft and turn that into something that you can use in Minecraft. So, you know, just so many possibilities. It's such a flexible platform. Can't say enough good things about Minecraft and the possibilities with that.
So I just want to say the free tool, perhaps you're referring to this Tinkercad?
Yes.
And I'm showing that on the screen right now. So different things that you can model in Tinkercad and then send to your 3D printer. And you were telling me a little about that. It's really smart the way it uses the printer ink or filament by reinforcing solid items with a core inside and things like that.
Yeah, it's really neat the way that the software kind of detects, you know, if you've got like a big block of something, it will actually put the honeycomb supports inside it. So it saves the material, but then it is also structurally just as strong to do something like that as opposed to doing it solid like it might if you didn't have that honeycombing inside. And you know, part of that is the software, but then also, you know, as it's going through, kids are gonna ask, you know, why does it do that? Well, and you know, here's why, and you know, you can have another conversation around that as well.
Great. So maybe we should talk a little bit about the resources that might be available to educators who are interested maybe in getting started or ramping this up a little bit. I'm sure there's a lot out there, and I'm probably confident in saying that this was a hot topic at ISTE, or is, you know, every year as well, as they're talking about the resources here. But what have we put together as far as, you know, somebody to get started here? Where can they go?
You know what? I'm going to point you to our Pinterest page, because in thinking about this and preparing for it, I went and searched on Pinterest and I found just a bajillion resources that I tagged a few of to give you an idea of some of the things that are out available on Pinterest when you search for STEM. So that's one place to start. But Jason and I talked in pre-show about things like the Math Counts Math Club. You can sign up for free for that and they'll send you all kinds of great free resources that extend your math lessons, that you know, have kids designing board games or you know, doing all kinds of fun activities around math. There's a webpage that has a whole bunch of robotics listed, links to ways to get involved with competitive robotics teams, like using Legos or other robot building mechanisms. So we'll have links in the show notes to those kind of things as well.
Yeah, and going beyond that, you know, Martin mentioned that ISTE is a good place to go. If you're an ISTE member, there are a series of webinars that that they did on STEM. This isn't just the fancy big budget kinds of things, but you know, just something that every day you can just do a little bit every day, and just little kind of tips and strategies, really good stuff for incorporating that into the curriculum. So if you're an ISTE member, you can get at those webinars at ISTE.org. They're available. I think they have archives on there. In their store that you can access from there, and then Sally also has a bunch of other links that'll be in the show notes too, I'm sure, for finding more information about how to do this and how to incorporate it.
Yeah, it looks like there's no shortage of resources. One thing as we were talking, and I was kind of curious about, is what about lower grades? And I saw one of the resources that even Sally had on our Pinterest board is STEM for preschoolers. So it sounds like there's been a lot of thought into, at every grade level, how to introduce this and how to get kids involved with a STEM program, regardless of where they are, whether they're in preschool or middle school or high school or beyond. So sounds like something that we ought to be paying attention to. Anything else to say about STEM before we go on?
Nope, just pray for me, because I got a lot of typing to do. We have a ton of resources, on the show notes, and that's at wellstech.wells.net. So visit that site probably tomorrow, and those notes will be there for you to explore to your heart's content.
Okay, beautiful. Let's move on to our ministry resources section. Sally, something related maybe to a kind of a Reformation theme, I think.
That's right, Martin. This is Reformation Week, and we wanted to point you to the Catechism that's available in a mobile-friendly format. Let me just bring up my screen share. The URL is catechism.cph.org. That's for Concordia Publishing House. They've put this together, and it is mobile-friendly. So if you just visit, you can see the nice layout of the catechism resources available there. When you click into them, just a very clean look to the text on the page, easy to read, even on a smartphone, and all of the catechism is available there for you. So enjoy, return to your Lutheran roots, and have fun celebrating the Reformation.
Yeah, that's we kind of highlighted that app a while back when it first came out, but they've done Concordia's done a nice job with that, and they've made it a web app, so all you have to do is direct your mobile browser to that and just bookmark it, then you've got it right there. So, cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
All right, news in tech. What's happening?
Well, it's a good thing that you're back, Martin, because you were up on this topic. The big news that I heard a lot was that a new application came out for Gmail. It's actually called Inbox.
I can share my screen here. Just let me show you my new inbox.
And so your Gmail account isn't going away, but this kind of is a different interface for it, I think.
Right, it's a layer on top. You still have Gmail, and you actually need Gmail to use this, but they've kind of redone the interface. And I can't say that I was overly struggling with the whole Gmail interface, but this is a little bit more mobile-friendly, and I think the people who really would benefit from a tool like this are, you know, people who kind of got inbox chaos. You know, it's a little bit out of control because it makes it real easy to sort through things. They maintain some of the categories. They now call them bundles. So you can kind of see on my screen if you're looking at home, you've got a promos area, updates area, social area. They've added something called purchases. You can see that I purchased some printer ink. And what they've done is where they know what the content is, so if it's a video, an image, a purchased item, a map, an address, something like that, they'll show it right in the email. So you can get, without digging into the email and running through the whole thing, you can see that content and interact with it. So, for instance, this ink that I was talking about, there's a track package link right there. It says that it's shipped. I can track the package, see when it's going to arrive. You can create your own bundles as well, and then it's very easy to sort through and archive things as well. So normally you'll get a lot of stuff in promos, for instance. So if I click into my promos, I've got Audible and Mileage Plus and Target, and there's a little button here that appears in each of these bundles where I just click it and they all go away. I don't need to go into each one individually and do something with them. So it's made for quick and easy disposition of emails, and it's just kind of a nice way to visualize the email all in one page and then quickly sort through and get through it. You can pin things to the home page so that those things that you want to come back to don't get lost with all the other stuff. And there's a little toggle here at the top that enables you to do that. One of the neatest features, and this is something that our friend Pastor Rob Gunther has talked about with a tool that allows you to send email away and then come back to you at a prescribed time. You know, let's say, don't show this to me for a day or a week or whatever. They've kind of built that into this new inbox client. So you can either mark it as done, or you can say, I don't want to see this now. Show it to me in a week, or show it to me tomorrow, or show it to me on a certain day. The last thing that's helpful is that each email you can assign a reminder to, so that as you're viewing the email, you can you'll click a button and say, hey, remind me to call this person or to set an appointment or do such and such. So it's really kind of a nice improvement to the tool, and it's by invitation only right now. But it's free, and I'm assuming that very shortly everybody would be able to get access to it. So that's the hotness in tech right now.
So I have a link that I'll share in the show notes about getting Inbox by Gmail. So if you don't have an invite, you can send an email to inbox@google.com and wait for them to invite you. One thing about it is it only works on traditional Gmail accounts. It doesn't work on your Google Apps accounts, at least not yet. But you can request an invite that way, or someone that has it can invite you as well. And then there's also an overview video. So if you're wanting to see it in action, you can watch the video. Or you could just rewatch this podcast, because Martin just showed it to you. So take your pick. anyway, that's the news. That's all the buzz I've been hearing lately. It's all about inbox. You know, does Google do that on purpose where they just release it?
Just kind of create their own little buzz because nobody can get to it. Yep, exactly.
You want the invitation just because you're on the outside of it. Yep. I don't know.
Everybody's going crazy. I got to have this. I mean, it's not revolutionary, but it's kind of a neat tool. So.
But, yeah, they didn't just put it in the iOS store for it to be lost among the millions.
Right.
Made it invitation only.
Created their own little buzz. So let's move on to our tips or picks of the week. Jason, you want to lead us off here? What's your pick of the week?
Yeah, sure. My pick of the week is a hardware pick. So I'm going to share my window here real quick and make sure I get the right thing up. So mine is a hardware pick. It's called Little Bits. So, you know, in the vein of STEM, as we're talking about that, these are little magnetic electronic kits where you have these little, you have switches and you have power, and they only work one way, and really neat little tools that you can kind of put together. And then they also see, you know, they've got a way to build them, put them together with Legos now too. But the cool thing is that these are, once again, they're super little. You know, I haven't had a hands-on with them yet. But you can go onto their website and purchase them. But you, as an educator, you get a 15% discount. So, and getting that access is really easy to get. So, you know, they're about $100 for a base kit, but you can move up, you know, depending on how much you want to put in there. You know, there's a space kit where you build a rover and put some stuff together. There's some Arduino stuff where you can kind of incorporate, you know, once again, an Arduino is kind of like a Raspberry Pi, but you know, does the hardware side of things and can run servos and those kinds of things. So you know, so many different cool things that you can do with these. So this is my pick of the week. I hope to have the opportunity to get to play with those a little bit sometime soon.
Yep. Maybe on your Christmas wish list, huh?
Yes. I already showed them to my wife. She says, "Oh, those look really nice."
Yeah, great enthusiasm.
All right. Sally, your pick of the week.
My turn, and mine is also STEM related. Let me do a quick screen share. I think I've talked about this on the podcast in the past, but it was probably at least 3 or 4 years ago. The website is You Can Do the Cube, and it's related to the Rubik's Cube. Anybody that knows me knows that I love the Rubik's Cube. And somewhere in my past, a long, long time ago, I memorized the solution so I can do the cube because I read the book. Well, this is a website that allows teachers to introduce the Rubik's Cube in their classroom, and they provide a lot of teacher resources, and guess what? They provide STEM lesson plans. So you can use the Rubik's Cube to teach at the elementary, middle school, or high school level, and they've got the lesson plans for you to use to do it. And what kind of things might you teach? Well, one thing might be just to work one side of the cube and create mosaics with them. So everyone in the classroom is producing a different combination of the colors of the cube, and when you put them all together, you end up with a mosaic. That's just one example of the types of activities you might do. They also have, you know, Rubik's Cube kits that you can order with all of these curriculum-related activities and things, but they also have a lending library where you can get the Rubik's Cubes for a period of 6 weeks. They will ship them to you. All you do is pay the return shipping. And I've actually done this, worked like a charm. They sent me a whole bunch of these nice booklets where you can download online, but just step-by-step booklets that walk the kids through and teach them how to solve the Rubik's Cube. And again, you could use it just for the solving of the one side of it, even if you don't want to go all the way through the full cube. But there's all kinds of activities on the website around solving the Rubik's Cube. You can get into competition, Rubik's Cube solving team activities, and all kinds of things. So here's just one more way that you can introduce STEM in the classroom at a very affordable price. So you can do the Rubik's Cube.
Very cool.
Here's my perpetual Rubik's Cube. Can you guys see that?
Oh, so she's got to do it to get the date right every day.
Yeah, every day I solve my date, so fun stuff.
That's cool. You've talked about Rubik's Cubes before. I've never gotten into, well, when I was a kid I did, but I'd probably be good for just lying around the house and with nothing to do, trying to recover.
Sure, unless it Rubik's stresses Cube. You out.
Yeah, that's right. It should not raise my heart rate. All right, my pick of the week is health-related. Go figure.
Good thing.
I've talked about this app before. This is an app on iOS and on iPhone, on iOS and on Android. And it's also a website, and it's called MyFitnessPal. And MyFitnessPal does a couple of things. It both tracks intake, so food intake, and it also tracks exercise, and it will other meal devices. So if you've got a Fitbit or something that tracks your steps, or you've got apps that gauge your running, which I have an app that does that, or hiking or biking, whatever it is, it all integrates with this and puts it all together. You can kind of set goals if you have a goal to lose weight or reduce caloric intake or sugar or whatever. So obviously with my health, I had all kinds of new instructions that I have to follow. So not that I needed to lose any weight, but I needed to kind of modify what I put into my body. So MyFitnessPal comes in real handy for that. One of the neatest things about it is that on the app, there's a barcode scanner. So any food that has a barcode, I can scan the barcode and it automatically finds in the database and inputs all the numbers. So if you look at my food intake, let's say for today, you can see what I ate for breakfast. I had orange juice and Cheerios and milk and yogurt. So I had a pretty healthy breakfast of 301 calories. It tells me how many carbs, how many grams of fat, how much protein, how much sodium, and so on and so forth. And then as you go throughout the day, you can kind of check off how you're doing against your goals. Down at the bottom, they tell you, well, I've got 1,234 calories remaining I can eat today, and 126 carbs left, and protein, how much I need to kind of hit my goal for protein, those kinds of things. You can track your water and everything else. And then day over day, you get a nice little guide for what you're putting in your body. Now, it can be kind of a hassle at first, but if you're really interested in kind of measuring what you're doing and what you're doing to your body, which I'm obviously very interested in at this point, these kinds of apps, there's many of them. This is just one of them. This is one I like because it's cross-platform, iOS and Android. It'll work on computer as well. It's got a great database of foods, which is really helpful. Once you type anything in, and you can kind of go out to eat and do this too. So if you go to Panera or something, you have a Sierra turkey sandwich or whatever, you can just type in Panera Sierra turkey, and it probably has it in there. You can set portion sizes and track your water intake, those kinds of things. One of the neater things too is you can go online and find recipes for different meals. So Debbie's done this, so we've got some healthy recipes out there. You can just plug in the URL to the page for the recipe online, and it'll suck in all the ingredients with, and then match them up to its database and kind of spit out a portion size and all the things that go into that particular meal, and then you kind of save that for future use as well. So I think this is one of the best apps out there. It's totally free. Works really well, doesn't crash, it works with the barcode scanner, and it's real easy to kind of replicate meals. So if you have kind of the same breakfast over and over, you don't have to scan the barcodes every time. You just plug it in there, and you've got a good reading of what you've done that day. So MyFitnessPal. It's at MyFitnessPal.com, or if you just search on MyFitnessPal in the App Store or the Google Play Store, you'll find it. So that's my pick of the week.
Good pick. I've used it to track my exercise, but not ever delved into all of that food stuff that you demonstrated. So that's pretty cool to see the capabilities. I love the barcode scanner. I have used a food app for a long time because of my children having diabetes. We always want to look up carb counts.
Yep.
When we're at restaurants or whatever. And there is no barcode scanner in the apps that I've been using. So that's pretty impressive to me. So.
Yeah, I really, when I was in the hospital, I really empathized with your kids, two of them who have to deal with diabetes. And because when you're recovering from heart surgery, they really care about your sugar intake or your insulin levels.
Oh.
So I was, you know, my fingers were pricked every hour for like,
oh, God bless you.
Like 4 days.
Wow.
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah.
So you're woke every night. I mean, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock,
yeah.
Every night, 4 o'clock at night.
Wow.
Just to measure that. Then an insulin pump and whatever for, you know, if it was out of whack, and usually it was fine. But I really empathize with anybody who's got to deal with that. That's
yeah.
But that's kind of, there's good news on that front too. Is there, you know, new things coming out that will more easily measure that? And you know, we've talked a little bit about that in the past with maybe like contact lenses or other things that you can use to get a better reading of that and regulate that stuff. So
yep, amazing technology for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe, Jason, you can build us something with that 3D printer over there.
Oh, yeah. I'll get right on that.
Thank you. Awesome.
All right. Let's move on. Wells Insider.
Yep, we got some insider news for you guys. I will share a link in the show notes to the Wells Hymnal, the latest Wells Hymnal survey. So apparently they went through the process of surveying pastors and church musicians and teachers about their use of the Wells Hymnal, and now they've opened up a survey for plain old members like you and I so that we can tell them about what we like about the hymnal, what we'd like to see there, and that kind of thing. So there is a survey available on the Wells.net site. Again, I'll have a link in the show notes. Go there, click the link that says take the survey. It'll walk you through the process. They're recommending that you have a hymnal handy as you answer the survey. That might make things a little bit easier for you. Not a requirement, though. And then just kind of open to specific comments that you didn't ask you about. They have places for you to submit those to. So go get your 2 cents worth in and be part of the new hymnal development project.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go into our need to know section. We've got a training class coming up and a conference we want to talk about.
That's right. A couple of dates for your calendar. First up is Final Web for Dummies. We're going to be doing that as an online training January 21st to 23rd. So join us in a Google Hangout, and we will teach you all about how to build your website or improve upon your existing website for beginner, intermediate, and advanced levels. So cost is $49 per day, and you can find out more about the training at bit.ly/FW training info. So check it out, and we hope to see you there. And then, you're right, we do have a conference coming up. All three of us are part of the planning committee, so we want to make sure we put a plug in for Wells Tech Conference 2015. It'll be here before you know it, guys. I hope you're working on your summer plans, because July 9th through 11th, we're going to meet up in Waukesha, Wisconsin, right near the Center for Mission Ministry. For the conference, we have a conference website up. You can get an idea of the schedule of events, the keynote speakers, and you can sign up for information so that when the registration comes out and that kind of thing, we will email you that information. So head on over. It's wells.net/WellsTechConf and sign up for our informational emails.
Very good. Yeah, so we'll keep you posted on things as they become available. We're just finalizing some of the classes. And they really look interesting. I'm really excited about some of the speakers that we have coming in.
So. Yeah, I'm hoping I get to attend some of those and not just be busy doing work around the conference, because they do seem to be a lot of good things going on.
Yep. And any Wells Tech show would not be complete without its community feedback section. And we do have some feedback today.
A few things to share here. The first one is from our coworker, Martin Debbie Kameen, who shared a link to a page where you can learn more about Office 365. This is the cloud-based Microsoft Office tool, and apparently they offer free webinars every Tuesday, and they archive all those webinars online. So if you want to learn more about different components of Office, they've got, you know, Outlook, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, all kinds of different focuses in these trainings. They're short, I think only 15 minutes each, so not asking for a big commitment. You can attend live or you can just check out the archive and learn more about Office 365. Pastor Rob Gunther?
Rexcon, I've watched them. Microsoft has done just a tremendous job at providing training resources, just kind of assuming nothing, you know, step by step. So, you know, if you're advanced, intermediate, or you know, rank beginner, these are going to hit your sweet spot someplace.
Excellent. We heard from Pastor Rob Gunther this week. He sent us a link to Homeboy. Homeboy is the world's most accessible home security system. So the concept is it attaches magnetically, lasts 3 months on a single charge, and automatically alerts you when motion is detected. And he says $150 per gizmo right now, and you can invite a bunch of your church members to monitor the building for you. So I think multiple people can access it, perhaps through their cell phones and things like that. So if you are looking for a security system, it might be worth checking out Homeboy. And then lastly, a link that I came across in some of my reading from Lifehacker, it's a link to a website that calculates the energy usage by your energy vampires, it calls them, things that you leave plugged in that don't need to be plugged in all the time. For instance, if you leave your desktop computer on and just, you know, running overnight all the time, never shut it down, power it off, that's potentially costing you $25 per year to do that. So interesting calculator. We'll have a link in the show notes that takes you directly to the calculator. You can say how many of these different devices you leave playing all the time or plugged in all the time, using energy. You know, if you have a coffee pot that's plugged in all the time, that's costing you $1 a year to leave it plugged in all the time. If your microwave is plugged in all the time, there's $3 more per year. So it adds up surprisingly fast if you add some of these different things to the mix, and if you have multiple computers, for instance, plugged in all the time, running, $75 a year in energy costs. So check out the calculator. It might motivate you to take a different look at what you're leaving plugged in your home.
Yeah, even if you don't have something attached, sometimes just these adapters are drawing power. So cell phone adapter, those kinds of things, for charger for a cell phone, etc. So interesting website. Mm-hmm. Is that it for community feedback, Sally?
That'll do it for this week, yes, sir.
WellsTech.wells.net is a place to go. We have all kinds of ways to get in touch with us, including Pinterest, Facebook, Twitter, Digo. Just send us a good old-fashioned email, WellsTech@wells.net. You can even leave us a voicemail if you go to that show notes page. So next week, we are excited to kind of finish up our conversation about Pastor Tech. A number of months ago, we launched a technology survey specifically for pastors, asking them what kind of technology they use. We talked a little bit about that last month, and this is part two. We're going to have Carl Nolte join us from Northwestern Publishing House, talking about HymnSoft, which is one of those pieces of tech that pastors and congregations use. And anybody who submitted a survey will be eligible to win a giveaway of HymnSoft Player 3.0, and so we'll be giving it away on that show, so you'll want to tune in next week for all that good stuff.
Looking forward to it. We're going to end the show with a look at three different videos we have on the topic of STEM. I couldn't pick just one. There's a couple of really brief overview videos that explain the concept of STEM. So if you're looking maybe to present this to a school board or a parent group or whatever, you might want to just kind of explain it with some of these overview videos. If you're looking to inspire your teaching staff on STEM, there's a TEDx talk that I think is very motivational. It shows the concept of STEM at work and how students can get excited about the integration of this type of learning in their classroom schedules. So check out not one, but three instructional videos that we've added to our Wells Tech playlist.
And you can find that on our show notes page, wellstech.wells.net. Jason, really appreciate you coming on the show once again. It's always a little bit of sunshine that you bring to the show. Appreciate that.
As long as I can get out of the dark.
And Sally, thanks for your yeoman's work on Wells Tech in my absence. I made it through the show, so that was goal number one. So look forward to doing it again next week, and looking forward to talking with all you all next week. So thanks for joining us, and God bless. See you next week.